Welcome back to the program. As I had mentioned, Andrew Browning would be joining us. He is the Executive Vice President of the Consumer Energy Alliance. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, and the number one question on everybody's mind, as you can imagine, what can we do as a nation to get this gas price down and get an energy policy that makes sense for the United States?
Well, you're right. I mean, the rise in energy prices is a significant problem. It's already $3.50 a gallon. It's up 25 cents since January. And some experts are saying, you know, we could get up to $4 or maybe $5 a gallon by sometime this summer. You know, that hurts consumer spending. A 25-cent jump in gasoline prices, if it happens over a year, would cost the economy about $35 billion. It really cuts into people's disposable income. You know, a lot of this is the rise in higher oil prices are just kind of market fundamentals right now. Crude prices are higher because of such things as a record cold snap in Europe. You know, some of the economies in Asia have been humming along. Emerging economies like China have been consuming, you know, a lot more oil. And very significantly, you know, this issue with Iran and the West basically, you know, trying to sanction them over their nuclear program. The world leaders feel that Israel may be planning a strike to attack Iran. They are the third largest oil exporter in the world. They've threatened to withhold their own deliveries and to block the Strait of Hormuz. This is a waterway which one-fifth of the world's oil flows. And so those you're seeing those kind of fundamentals reflected in the price rises. I think what we can do about it is we can produce more at home. The fact is the U.S. has trillions of barrels, really, if you got down to it, in shale, and the Rocky Mountain West, and new tight oil, which is found in eastern Colorado and the Niobrara Shale and the Bakken in North Dakota. And then, you know, obviously, you know, shale gas is, you know, one of the big issues of our day, the big, you know, what I call it, this quiet energy revolution that's kind of been happening in the United States, where the industry has been developing or perfecting technologies that allows us to extract oil and gas where we haven't been able to do it before. So we need to focus more at home, I think, rather than relying on, you know, areas of the world that are not secure.
Right. I would rather this be an energy issue and just talk about new technologies and oil and where it is and how much. But the fact of the matter is it is political because right in the midst of this, we're at the mercy of Iran. If they do something crazy, it's going to affect all of us. And this is silly because we have the Obama administration blocking the Keystone Pipeline. And my understanding is they are blocking the shale exploration out west. So we have a North Dakota oil boom, some of the lowest unemployment in the country, 3%. And yet we're told the government is stopping us from letting other states experience that boom and getting that shale oil out. Am I wrong in this assessment, or is this what's going on?
We've been a bit disappointed, to be honest with you, in the Obama administration's stance on energy over the past few years. The fact is there has been a permit slowdown in the Gulf of Mexico where a significant amount of our oil and gas is produced. You mentioned the oil shale out in western Colorado and eastern Utah. The Department of Interior has recently revised their overall plan where they're actually withdrawing available acreage and making the terms and conditions for companies just more egregious. And I'm kind of with you. I don't understand why in our current environment that, that would be a policy decision. Other countries, Estonia and Jordan, are developing shale and have, are putting together policy and regulatory frameworks that are conducive towards, you know, development of this energy. And I don't understand why we're not as well. Keystone, that is the wrong decision at the wrong time. You know, the Canadians are, you know, number one trading partner. They're a valuable ally. And they've made clear that this is going to be developed and it's going to go elsewhere, if not to the United States. So we're disappointed. We're heartened, I guess, by his recent statements in the State of the Union and his State of the Union speech, where he'd focus on energy, including conventional. But, you know, the devil's in the details, and it's all about how the lower levels of his administration respond, and we definitely intend on keeping their feet to the fire on that.
We're speaking with Andrew Browning here, the Executive Vice President of the Consumer Energy Alliance, and as you can tell, Andrew is much kinder to the Obama administration than I am, and that's okay, Andrew, but the fact of the matter is, when we hear from the White House or from Democrat officials that we're all for an energy policy and we're going to get energy, we're going to get energy, but then they block the Keystone Pipeline and they block the shale oil exploration, their words don't really give me much hope. Actions are what we need here. And Andrew, you know, you know more about this stuff than I do, but actually my degree is in chemical engineering. And so this Keystone Pipeline thing bothers me to no end because this is not a nuclear reactor. And what I often say on the air is, ladies and gentlemen, it's 2012. This is a pipe. This is plumbing. I believe we can build plumbing in 2012. Am I making it too simple, Andrew?
No, you know, you're really right. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline crosses an area that has dozens, if not hundreds, of pipelines that are kind of crisscrossing the United States. So it's not, this isn't new. The bottom line is some of the groups, I call them anti-development groups, not necessarily environmental groups, you know, they've kind of, this is their line in the sand, and they've really pressured the administration, you know, not to build this pipeline. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense in this era of high unemployment. The amount of jobs that could be created, this are just, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, kind of high paying blue collar jobs that a lot of the labor groups, frankly, that are also part of the Democratic Party, I think, are a little bit disappointed in. And so, you know, a lot of these anti-development groups talk about that they put in 100,000 or 200,000 comments into the Secretary of State to express their negative stance on the pipeline. We put in 500,000 comments into the State Department advocating for development of this pipeline. So, you know, a significant amount of the U.S. population wants to see this happen. They understand that we need to start sourcing our crude from more reliable, friendly sources. The Canadian oil sands are the second largest oil deposit outside of Saudi Arabia in the world. So why aren't we accessing that?
Right. They're right next door. They're an ally. It just makes so much sense, Andrew. It kind of drives me crazy. You had mentioned Estonia and Jordan, and I was speculating that American companies are going to go over there. But let's face it, some company's going to go over there.
Yeah.
Is it possible it's going to be American companies going over there and getting the oil out of the shale in those countries?
Sure. You know, I mean, you know, the oil and gas companies, it is a global market for oil and gas. If we put egregious taxes and reduce incentives, as the Obama administration is proposing right now, they'll pick up and they'll go elsewhere. The fact is, if they're finding more conducive opportunities elsewhere, they will move. Those jobs and the tax revenues and everything that kind of comes out of that will be produced in another part of the world. It's interesting that last year our oil import bill was our largest part of our trade deficit. By kind of producing at home, we could save hundreds of billions of dollars a year. That's real money.
No, it sure is, especially with these deficits and the debt we're running. The frustrating part to me is, in my understanding, it's not just demonizing the companies and taxation of the companies and regulation. The White House actually is blocking the Western lands because the federal government owns those lands, and it's blocking companies from getting in there and getting the shale oil. Is that the case or not?
Well, yeah. I mean, the terms and conditions, there are a number of companies that are kind of in R&D programs out there. 70% of all that shale oil is, and it's different. This is a different type of oil than the tight sands and, say, the tight oil in the Bakken. It's a little harder to get to, but by U.S. Geological Survey estimates, there, you know, are about a trillion barrels there. The companies are ready to invest in R&D towards developing this, but, you know, when the terms and conditions are changing on a fairly regular basis, they're going to pick their capital up and go elsewhere. 70% of all oil shale is on public lands, and so, you know, unfortunately, it's going to take the government to develop a legal and regulatory framework conducive towards development, to conducive towards investment, to keep the companies there. Again, I think I told you they've revised an environmental impact assessment, or it's called a PEIS, a programmatic environmental impact statement. And so this is something that was done. It was publicly vetted in 2008. You know, tens of thousands of people commented on it. The program was put in place. The companies put their investment dollars there. And this current administration is just kind of declaring the technology's not there. We shouldn't be, you know, putting these public lands available to companies because it's not ready for prime time, in the words of our Interior Secretary. And again, it is ready for prime time. Our companies are developing the capital and expertise to make it happen. Again, they're doing it in Estonia. Estonia is one of the key oil shale developers in the world. They're actually powering a significant part of their economy on it, and thus, you know, kind of reducing their dependence on Russian crude and Russian natural gas.
You know, Andrew, before we chatted, again, we're speaking with Andrew Browning, the Executive Vice President, Consumer Energy Alliance. I was really hoping that I was wrong on some of these things, and the White House is more of a reasonable group of folks. And it turns out I wasn't wrong. They're tyrannical. They're hurting the economy. They're hurting our energy independence. They're forcing us to send companies overseas, forcing us to use overseas oil. Yet they say all these glowing things, how America can do it, how America's going to be great, how America's going to be energy independent. But their actions just don't match their words. Now, you mentioned the Bakken oil. Is that the North Dakota oil boom right
North
now?
North Dakota, yeah. North Dakota, Montana. Stretches a little bit into Canada as well.
Now, is that oil shale, or is that just...
That is something called tight oil. It's already kind of conventional oil. It's just kind of trapped in rock. And so these new technologies that are being developed... I take that back. They're not new technologies. They're old technologies that have been used for 60 years, but companies have perfected them in a way. It's horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing in a way that makes it economically feasible to extract oil. Bakken is a huge success story. It's ramped up to over 500,000 barrels a day very quickly over the past few years. And there was a report that came out last fall from the National Petroleum Council that basically indicates that these new technologies are transforming the American energy scene in a way that could put us in front of Saudi Arabia and Russia by 2017 if they're developed. They're allowed to develop. It is a huge success story for us. But it is conventional oil that is extracted from hydraulic fracturing process.
Okay, so that's called tight oil.
Tight oil,
okay.
Yeah.
Andrew, we're out of time. Really appreciate your time today. We would love to have you back on the program.
Would love to. Thanks for having me.
Plenty more straight ahead. This is 640 WGST and new at 92.3 FM, the talk of Atlanta.